My name's Garth Hewitt, and I'm passing some cards around which they just say something about Bethlehem, because I'm talking on Bethlehem in this seminar under the title of the amazing World Nativity of Torfik Salsa, or words to that effect. And we're just had a moment's hesitation because we had some nice pictures to show you, and you can never trust technical things, can you? It's better to be a singer, frankly. But a walled nativity will appear, and pictures may appear too, so it's quite exciting to see how it works out. We finished this session, 12:15? 12:15, okay. So, and I'll leave a chance for questions. So I will speak for a while and then very suddenly stop, and it'll be your chance to ask questions if you'd like to. The fascinating story of Torfik Salsa's walled nativity. And strange title, but it's a chapter of a book. That I've just got out called Bethlehem Speaks, Voices from the Little Town Cry Out, and it's available in the bookstore. And if you want to have more information about Bethlehem or the voices I interviewed, there are 16 witnesses in this book who talk about the situation in the Bethlehem area. And the situation there is absolutely crucial at the moment, as it is right across the West Bank and in Gaza. And your thoughts and prayers might be talking of Gaza, particularly with Jeff Halper. Did some of you hear Jeff speak when he was at Greenbelt, an Israeli Jewish academic? And he's on a boat at the moment heading to Gaza. It's called the Free Gaza boat. Some of you have heard about it. There are two of them, Free Gaza and Liberty. And the Israelis have said they're going to stop it because it's clearly a security risk. Peace activists are on it. Including the sister-in-law of Tony Blair, Lauren Booth. And they're bringing humanitarian aid to Gaza. And we have this horrendous medieval siege of Gaza. The suffering there is unbelievable. And there are certain activists who have just said, we've got to try and get in and break this. And Israel says they've moved out of Gaza, so why can't the boats come and land humanitarian aid on the coast? I'm sure they won't be allowed to. But at the moment, they are heading that way, and I can't get my computer to work today, so I haven't got any fresh news, but you might want to check Free Gaza website today. And remember, pray for them. Jeff Halper is going to come to Amos Day on the 20th of September, all being well, if he's out of prison. He will speak to us about some of the current situation in Palestine. That's at All Hallows on the Wall. And if you go to the Amos stall in the G-Source, you can get information about that as well, or go to our website. But he's someone who has taken such a stand for human rights, and I think today we should remember him and the others who are heading towards Gaza. But I am heading towards Bethlehem. To be honest, for cowardly reasons, I was asked to be on the boat and to sing to them. I had to explain, I don't do water. I just feel sick from the minute I'm on it. So I said, look, I do lots of things. I won't do water, so I'm out of that one. So I'm here. Some of you may even remember a poster which has been up at Greenbelt of a man working in olive wood. And if we get our pics working, you will see it. But it's almost a biblical scene of someone working away, and you would think, it's a carpenter from Nazareth. But it's actually Torfik Salsa from Beit Sahur, right by Bethlehem. It's the Shepherd's Fields area. And he sits and carves in his little workshop, along with others who are working with him. And I have often visited his home and are close friends with his family, godfather to his grandchildren. And we've been selling his olive wood items at Amos Trust for the last few years to raise support for the community there, both for him and the others who are working on olive wood, because the cutting off of the tourist trade has had a huge implication for the people of the Bethlehem and Beit Sahur area. Until the tourism comes back, the need for this is essential. And to understand the situation, the Bethlehem area is down to 3 to 4 square miles now. 87% of Bethlehem land has been taken by the illegal occupation. And it's a huge quantity of land. This is the land that they would work, the field. So all the area has been taken and the wall has been put round. And they're trying to survive within this occupation. And if you can imagine, what is it like? You're trying to bring up a family there. All the green land is being taken. What do you do? How do you survive? And that's the context of Bethlehem at the moment. They're not allowed to travel. They're cut off by these settlements, these huge, I was going to say Israeli-only settlements, but they're not actually. They're Jewish-only, because Israeli Arabs are not allowed to live in the settlements. The bypass roads, Palestinians, huge amount of land has been taken, paid for by American dollars, to build these bypass roads, but they're not for Palestinians. And, of course, the separation wall. And this separation wall is a monstrous size. It's 9 meters tall, and you, when you're there, you're just so shocked because you can't believe that there would be such a huge edifice that is put so close to people to surround them. And this wall, it weaves in and out of the West Bank. It's all built on Palestinian land. In other words, had it been built on the border, you could think of a justification for it. If the Israelis said it is for security, we feel we need that. I'm sure I would still grumble for certain reasons. I'm not in favor of walls. But you couldn't complain in the way that we currently raise the question about the wall, because at the moment it's so clearly nothing to do with security, and it's so clearly a land grab. So the local Palestinians are imprisoned. Their freedom's been taken away. Their human rights have been taken away. And lo, we have Tawfiq Salsa's first of his walled nativities. This one, this was the first. Is it looking good further back? Is it looking good? Yeah. It's slightly blurred up front, or is that just my eyes? Slightly blurred. Good. I'm still physically well. but this is it. And this is the original one he did. And here are the wise men. They can't get through. There's the Holy Family. And there's the wall, which, interestingly, can be removed. Because this is quite an expensive set. And Tawfiq is an optimistic man. And if you've bought one for your church, you might feel, well, it's about £50, this one. So when the day comes, the wall falls, you may remove your wall, and the wise men can get through. And so he made this, and he'd been thinking about the flight to Egypt. How would the Holy Family get through to Egypt today? They wouldn't be able to. That's what started his thinking. They'd be caught inside Bethlehem. And he was thinking about the lack of movement and the lack of opportunity. At the same time, Chris Rose from Amos Trust saw this, and he asked Tawfiq if he could do a smaller one, and for individuals. And here it is. You can get your own. And this one sells now, I think, about £15. And this is the one which last Christmas we marketed with an extraordinary effect. And just so you can see it, pass it around just to have it. It's nice to feel the olive wood and just to have a look at it. It's a lovely little piece of work. But you can get that as an individual one. And it's being sold on site at John Logan's stall. Now, let me just describe. He's selling Palestinian olive wood. He said to me, I'm opposite the purple octopus. I don't know what he's been taking, but it didn't mean a lot to me, but I'm hoping that means something to you. And then he said, turn right at the Christian Aid tent. So are you getting the sense of where that might be? In some mystical way, I think you're going to find it. And he is selling some nativity sets there. And it was this set that caused such an impact last Christmas. And what Torfik was saying is all is not well in the Holy Land. He used his craft to say it. All is not well in Bethlehem. All is not well in Beit Zahur, in the Shepherd's Field area. And he's seeing the land being taken day after day. He's seeing the settlers come and attacking. He sees the Israeli army coming in, and they are kidnapping people. I read a daily report, and I can give you, it's a website, IMEMC, and it stands for something Middle East in the middle, IMEMC. Look at it each day, just www.imemc, or Google it. And you will see each day what the Israeli army is doing, going to town after town, kidnapping people. And they are part of the 11,000 who are now in jail. And I was there when one of those incidents was occurring. And it's a shock to be caught up in the middle of it all. And it was an incident where they were arresting one man, but I was in the Dahesha refugee camp. And it brought home to me the reality of what's going on. In fact, my guide was, we were trying to do some filming, and he was rushing towards the situation. As we were getting close, he said, "Oh, can you smell the tear gas?" He said, "You're okay with rubber bullets and tear gas, aren't you?" I said, "Well, you know, I wonder if we could just come back tomorrow." There were all these army vehicles, and there's a terrific, this is day by day. I caught a little glimpse and was able to move out of it, of something which people don't have an option. We were back in that camp and talking about it the following day. It's a terrible situation. And so Torfik knows what's going on. And when I'm talking about the Bethlehem area, I mean three towns, actually. They're the Christian towns of Bethlehem, Beit Zahur, the Shepherd's Field area, and Beit Jala. And this little area now is caught in the 3 to 4 square miles. No freedom of movement, which means no freedom of religion. It was the historical way that both Christians and Muslims relate to their faith is they go up to Jerusalem on holy days. That's what they always did. That's what you do at Easter. That's what you do at Ramadan. It's now you can't do it. You can try and get a pass. I talked to one man who was turned back at the wall when I was there in the summer, and he had his two little boys with him. And he said, "We were going to Jerusalem to pray." It was a Muslim, and they were going up to the Haram al-Sharif, to the Dome of the Rock there, or Al-Aqsa Mosque. And he had been telling his lads about it, and all the excitement, "We're going, I have a pass." And when they got to the thing, he was turned back. He had a pass, but they said, "Your children don't have a pass." But he said, "But they don't have to have a pass." I said, "Oh yeah, they do." And the disappointment. And so you, even if you get your pass, you can't assume you'll get through. Last year when I was there, I had to interview someone at the time that my wife Jill was flying in. And so I sent Torfik's son, Wissam, who had a pass, to go and collect Jill. And he got to the gate of Bethlehem, and they said, "You can't go through." "Should I have a pass? I have all the permits." "No, no one can go through. It's the Feast of Sukkot. We are closing you down." For 1 week, they were closed down. In the holy feasts of one religion, others are stopped from movement. So even if you have a pass, you can't guarantee, and it's a tiny percentage. I mean, I talk to people whose family are in Jerusalem. "When did you last see them?" "Well, not for 10 years or whatever, or 8 years, or, you know, they cannot travel to that part where they were, for their religion, for their where they went shopping, where they went to meet their family, they can't go there. So this was his expression, Torfik, and I think we've got a picture of Torfik now. There he is. You'll probably say, "Ah," because you can remember seeing a poster up at Greenbelt like that. And in the book of prayers that Wilf Whitty and I did, there's a picture of Torfik in that, Holy Dreams to Feed the Soul. We press released the Nativity because we felt people would be interested to hear about it and would want to buy it. And it really caught people's imagination. Some of the articles were very well written. They followed up on it. Reuters, Jerusalem, they went down, they met with Torfik, they interviewed him. They did an absolutely superb article, very straightforward, and it went around the world. It was shown in context. People like the Independent picked it up and did a very good article indeed. The Ship of Fools website picked it up and did. They were doing something called 12 Kitsch Items of Christmas or something. As you know, they look at things from a certain way. And they added the wall nativity as the 13th item to show it as an aspect of protest, to make people think about Christmas and the context of Bethlehem in that, in the situation of Christmas. And there are huge numbers of people who view that website around the world. And through that and through other ways, it gradually got picked up. I've never known so many television stations want to come and interview and press and so on. They're phoning from all sorts of parts of the world. When I Googled, I discovered articles about it in languages I couldn't even recognize, which actually isn't too difficult. But but it did go crazy. And for those of you who are familiar with Amos Trust, you know the context in which we work. Because our commitment is to work with Christian, Jew, Muslim, to work with peacemakers, to work with people who are not particularly from the faith community. And we are committed to both Palestine and Israel. But as news of this nativity set spread around the world, two things happened. One, we had an overwhelming response of people who wanted to buy it, particularly from America, and we just could not meet that. And so we had to apologize. And secondly, we received a set of emails which seemed to have been coordinated, I would think. And they were first of all unaware of Amos, I think it'd be fair to say, and of who we work with. But they seemed to have no sense at all of what was happening in Bethlehem or who'd made the nativity. And some even called it anti-Semitic. And ironically, of course, Torfik is a Semitic person, and he wants his community not to be crushed and destroyed. It's his protest. And yet that sensitivity, again, was not there. There was an assumption that the wall had stopped suicide bombers. There was no sense of where the wall was, and it certainly is a wall that you can get around if you really did want to commit suicide, or of course you can fire rockets over. In other words, it doesn't stop. It isn't a totally complete wall, but nevertheless, there is the assumption: look, it's stopped it. There isn't any recognition of this method having been viewed by various Palestinian groups as not a good way forward, and that a truce had been called. And there was no sense of it being a land grab or what life was like for the Palestinian community. Let's glimpse the wall for a moment just to have a sense of what it's like. This is the wall at the entrance to Bethlehem. You are There's a whole network of walls around the entrance to Bethlehem, including an extraordinary thing. Those of you who visited Bethlehem in the past will have known the tomb of Rachel on the main road in. It's no longer in Bethlehem. The wall has been gone right round it, and that is now in Jerusalem, as it gets called. And you cannot go and see it. Christians and Muslims from Bethlehem are not allowed to see it. I've for 2 years now tried to see it, not been able to, but I've been told, and I don't know if this is true or not, that if I go to a settlement and get on a bus as an international, I might be able to go and see the tomb. A tomb holy, in some sense, to Jews, Muslims, and Christians. See, even a Muslim graveyard there around the site. So completely, the wall just sweeps out. And I was taken by the principal of Bethlehem Bible College, Bishara Awad, to visit the tomb just before they... to visit the tomb area just before they enclosed it in the wall. And there were shops there. And the last man was still in his shop. But of course, was selling nothing at that point. And we said, what are you going to do? And he wept and just said, I rely only on God now. And then when they closed the wall, I asked Bishara what happened. And they said, well, they took him out and they said to him, he said, but my land, my shop. They said, well, you can go around the other way, which of course he has to apply for a permit. And of course he doesn't get the permit. And now I hear that they're building a yeshiva around it and another settlement right on Bethlehem land. So this is the nature of what's going on. And when Torfik Salsa made his little wall, there was more offence almost, it seemed, that over his little protest than this. This monster which is imprisoning a whole community. And I've written the book Bethlehem Speaks because I'm very concerned about the urgency of the situation. If you can get out, particularly the Christian community, who may have links in other parts of the world, people are doing that. It's a shrinking community. And it seems to me a very deep tragedy that the community who have witnessed through the centuries to the birth of Jesus in this town, and the same goes for the Christian community around the Holy Land, who have witnessed through the centuries and held the flame, in our time, are being pushed out. And mostly, the churches don't seem to be aware of it. Mostly, I say. And obviously your church does, because you're telling them. But and I want to see that this Christmas, with producing the book, and I've produced a little CD as well called Bethlehem Palestine, and also a film, it will be coming out in about 2 or 3 weeks, called Hidden from View. And I'm trying to encourage churches to say, when you remember Bethlehem, because all of us do it once a year, you have to do that, in Advent and Christmas, remember the wonderful story of the birth of Christ, and remember the community now. Do not ignore them. Say something about it. Read something about it. Work out what you will do as a response. You may want to go there. You may want to link with someone there. You may want to pray for them. You may want to campaign. All of those options, but do something, because they are hardly surviving at all. And if you get the chance to hear Jonathan Katab during his time here, he will give you more of how the struggle goes on for that community. One thing that particularly disturbed me was the nature of some of the emails. A lot of them were racist. A lot of them exhibited Islamophobia. There is a real hatred of Muslims out there, a hatred of Arabs, a hatred of Palestinians. I would like to be able to tell you, well, of course, you know, they didn't. They all came from the States. But, of course, that's not the truth. A lot did. And that's where I think the campaign was coordinated. But they come from here as well. And I think we are facing, one of the people who I interview in Bethlehem Speaks is Jonathan Katab. And he says this: right now, throughout the world, we see a great rise of a new kind of anti-Semitism against Muslims. It's anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, Islamophobia, which manifests itself in very ugly ways, sometimes subtle, but sometimes very blatant, in the press, in cartoons, in the job market, in the daily social lives of Muslims and Arabs in Europe, and in the United States. There is a lot of anti-Arab and anti-Muslim racism. This is no less evil than anti-Semitism against Jews, and I think it should be fought. And he says that in his chapter, God is Not a Racist God. And I think we are facing something which I would like to say, to think that it wasn't too dominant, but I believe it's become increasingly dominant and even been taken up by some intellectuals, and I think that's a very disturbing trend. And I think history shows us, don't go this route, don't go this route. After a while, you can't control it, you can't stop it. When I was interviewed by the Jewish Chronicle about the Nativity, the journalist said, oh, some people are calling it anti-Semitic. And it was a kind of chatty little conversation. So I laughed. I hadn't heard that at that point. And he said, I agree with you. He said, it's not. He said, surely it's nothing to do with Judaism. And I said, no, it's what it is, one man's protest at something unjust that Israel's doing, but it's not anti-Israel or anti-Judaism. And he said, I agree with you, but I'm going to put in one or two quotes from people who are saying this. So which he was very fair, and it was a fair article. But what was interesting was the three quotes were all from Christian Zionists. And one of them was appalled that Christmas was used in this way. He said it should be about hope and unity. Exactly. Let's give some hope to the Palestinians, some unity by tearing down the wall. And I think that is the message of Christmas. And the road to peace, if we ignore all of what's going on behind the wall, if we ignore the 11,000 prisoners, if we ignore what's happening in Gaza and the people behind the wall in the West Bank, well, we allow the status quo to flourish. And it's no way to walk forward towards peace. I'll give you just a little taster of one or two of the emails. They kind of make you laugh at first. When they first came in, I laughed, you know. And then actually I stopped. I suddenly got very uncomfortable as you realized it was going deeper into echoes of really horrible racism. I won't read you too much, but just a little taster. Here's one. I remember bigots like your group in the democratic southern part of the US. They were called the KKK. The KKK wrapped itself in religion like you. God does not take kindly to those who abuse his chosen. If you ever read a Bible, you'd know this. May the Lord have mercy on you. Sincerely, a new wineskin Presbyterian. That was one of the milder ones. It's nice when they sign off nicely. One of them, after quite a measure of abuse, signed off Merry Christmas, I thought. He said, well, there's hope, you know. This one. I'm interested in your walled nativity package. I want you to ask, this is from James in Washington, D.C. Does it come complete with the little statues of suicide bombers and little make-believe rockets to be launched into Israel? How about the three wise jihadists? Seriously, folks, if you had such a hard-on for fighting anti-Christian violence, why do you fall all over yourselves in your determination to kiss Muslim and Arab ass at every turn and to vilify the Jews, etc., etc.? And he goes on in that line. Peace groups like yours keep ignoring the truth. The truth is you're really not about peace, but instead are nothing but a bunch of boot-licking, asking Arab whores, and so on. It goes on. Deeply, deeply disturbing. Here's one, simpler, more to the point, I think, from Ari Gold. As a Christian, you disgust me. Just remember, God is not on your side. So, that's more straightforward, isn't it? I mean, thank you. Larry here from the States. You silly oafs. Islam wants to kill Christians and Jews. The security wall and checkpoints have been most successful in reducing suicide attacks, etc. You silly dimmies. Proud American. Lawrence P. Johnson. This one, big capital letters, just an obscenity, from Schmidt. Bit of a philosopher, Schmidt. I quite like the way this one begins, and it becomes very disturbing, actually. You really are a bunch of self-righteous bastards. It's a warm sort of little opening, isn't it? Your little wall art shows how you don't really give a damn about people. It's just an exercise in making yourself feel superior. And then it talks about people who are dying from bombing. You don't think or care about true victims because you're too busy lining up for the boxcars. Because we must not make these ninth century maniacs angry. A couple of really... If I think I understand that correctly, I mean, that references to Muslims at the end, but the boxcar seems to be a reference to the Holocaust. And very disturbing sort of imagery starting to come. Here's one from Tommy. I'm not sure where Tommy's from. I think Tommy's from here. Your nativity scene fills me with disgust and nothing but contempt for your ignorance. Your time would be better off trying to look after Christians in Palestine. They suffer great degradation. Have a look at the Barnabas Trust and start worrying about Christians and other innocents wherever they're under Muslim domination. Regards, Tommy. P.S. The wise men would have been murdered by the barbarians in Gaza long before they reached the wall. Well, it's interesting. Because, again, the more subtle thing that I think comes from people here is, I mean, Tommy is more polite there. He ends regards. But this Muslim domination, and really if we have historical knowledge, we know where the domination comes from. And Mark Ellis really helped us last year, the Jewish theologian, in talking about the fact of the temptation for all religions is when you go for empire rather than community. And of course, the Christian empire, which started from Constantine onwards, it's a temptation for all religions, and he feels that's something which has happened to the Jewish religion with the creation of the State of Israel. But the assumption that there's some Muslim plot just feeds all the anti-Islamic fervor at the moment. And this is also linked in with Palestine. It's annoying to them that there are Christians in Palestine in some way, because they're sort of in the middle. This is a final one. This is from Itiel Herzl. What's really ironic is that Mary, Joseph, and Jesus were all Jews, and they would have likely been murdered by Palestinian terrorists. Get your facts straight, you anti-Semitic, Hitler-loving monsters. You sort of think, it's getting a bit strong, isn't it? We've started from this little protest, and you end up with a sign-off like that. And what I think in all of this, I've just watched a film, which do try and see, it's called The Man from Plains, and it's about Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter wrote a book called Palestine, Peace or Apartheid. It's actually quite a mild book, but the use of the word apartheid drew a very strong reaction. And the film follows him on around the States as he does a press launch of the book. And it's absolutely fascinating. He's great. I mean, he's 83 or something. He's a wonderful hero, I think. But there's one moment when he's coming to a book signing somewhere, and it's become very controversial. And there's a group of Palestinians supporting on one side of the street. The other street side, there's a group of Israeli supporters. But one of them is caught on camera yelling at the Palestinians. And they're very shocked. And what the person is yelling is, "You're nothing. You're nobody. Palestinians don't exist. You're nothing," he goes. And this, I think, is part of the struggle that's going on here. Some people are wanting to write one group out of history. It's extremely dangerous. And if we can somehow keep bringing people back to that foundation stone of human rights, what I as a Christian would want to say, in the image of God, you know, each one made in the image, and be supportive of Israelis and Palestinians and say there is a bottom line. One group is not nothing. One group are not just terrorists or animals or whatever you want to call them. Each group have are people who should be treasured and respected. And where we allow one group to dominate, and where we allow the use of violence to create the domination, which is what our country is caught up at the moment, these are very dangerous times. And we have to be, I think, as Christians, witnesses to another way, a way of non-violence, a way of peacemaking. But just before let me give you one more. This is, that's interesting. That's, the actual point of us putting up there is blacked out. Hello. The black bit says, "Peace be with you." And it's really disturbing. If any of you have seen it, you've probably felt it like me. This is the outside of the wall. Bethlehem's behind it. That's the gate. You can go in. Internationals. Oh, it's on the card, isn't it, that I sent round? How thoughtful of me to do that earlier on. That's right. It's on the card. Is it peace be with you? Peace be with you. And the Palestinians go through a really quite convoluted security area here. And it's as if tuck them away, put a nice sign on it, and I imagine it was meant cynically. Perhaps it wasn't. "Ma'am, okay, now peace be with you, but we won't see you anymore." Jewish people, Israelis, are not allowed to go into Bethlehem. Now, this causes a huge problem. It's separating the communities even more. But what if you're a Jewish tour guide? What you do is you say to your tour guide, "I'm not going with you into here, but we want to go and see." "Yes, you can go in. It's dangerous, but you can go in. I'll stay outside." So what do you do? Well, you think if we are going to go in, we'll go straight to the Church Nativity and get out again as fast as we can. We're not going to stay there. We're not going to spend money there. And so it's another economic way that undermines Bethlehem. And the relationship breakdown is one of the, it saddens me very much. Some of you have heard me talk in the past about Rabbi Jeremy Milgrom, of a friend of mine, who his closest friend was a Muslim within a refugee camp in Bethlehem. Relationships were there. There was a way forward. And all of that is being stopped. The second thing that we did last Christmas, I put a song. Are we? Is it going to work, do you think? Well, give it a try. I put a song on the website, on the Amos website, and somebody contacted us and said, Steve Bannum, I think his name was, and he said, could I put some pictures to it? And the song is called They've Cancelled Christmas in Bethlehem. And he put up pictures of the wall and some footage, which was obviously, in a sense, an amateur. It wasn't some clever piece of propaganda or whatever. It was someone with a camera just looking around on the wall. And I was staggered to see that now over 40,000 people have looked at this. And I think there's a great hunger for people are saying, what is actually happening? When you see it, you can't believe it. And let's just have a glimpse of the... here we go. Let's see if it works. Oh, we don't have sound hooked in?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, if we plug the lead in? They've cancelled Christmas in Bethlehem. They've cancelled peace in Bethlehem. In a land once known as holy, the gun is in control. They've cancelled Christmas in Bethlehem. They've cancelled freedom in Bethlehem. They've cancelled hope in Bethlehem. They've locked the little town behind a ghetto wall. They've cancelled Christmas in Bethlehem. And though angels are singing, they're trapped behind the wall. Yet angels keep singing down in Bethlehem. And if our Christmas songs and prayers are not to be in vain, we must pull down that prison wall, the strangling Bethlehem. And the wall must fall. The wall must fall. If peace on earth is to come, the wall must fall. They've cancelled wise men in Bethlehem. They've cancelled shepherds in Bethlehem. They've stopped the wise men at the checkpoint, and the shepherds can't leave home. They're under curfew, Bethlehem. And though angels are singing, they're trapped behind the wall.
Yet angels keep singing down in Bates Hill. And if our Christmas songs and prayers are not to be in vain, we must pull down that prison wall, the strangling Bethlehem. And the wall must fall, the wall must fall. If peace on earth is to come, the wall must fall. And the wall must fall, the wall must fall. If peace on earth is to come, the wall must fall. They've canceled Christmas, Bethlehem.
Can have a look at that on, if you just put "They've canceled Christmas in Bethlehem" or something like that on Google, and you can see that on YouTube. But it's interesting to see just how many have gone into that. And one of the other aspects that happened last Christmas was a group of artists went out to Bethlehem, Banksy and various others, and opened a shop in Manger Square. If you remember the previous year, the Archbishop of Canterbury had gone out and various religious leaders. But there really hadn't been tremendous publicity about Bethlehem since. And it was wonderful the artists went out. And in a way, I think it reflects one of the very prophetic things that the artist can do. The artistic imagination can sometimes cut right through, and I believe it's very important. So there was Banksy, and he and the other artists, and they went to Manger Square, which just shows some of the pictures. He'd actually been out there before, so there were some shots come from... This is one from last Christmas, and it's right opposite the Jackia Palace Hotel, near the wall. This is one of the previous visits. He put humour and hope into the painting. Some people criticized him for that. Said, the wall's ugly, we want more, you know, slogans and so on. But there, the children who with their buckets and spades have knocked a hole in the wall, and there's a beautiful vision. I thought it was a great thing. This time was, that's from this recent trip, the Dove. And I don't think we've got the ladder that goes right to the top of the wall, because that's at Ramala, I think. And he'd done a ladder that goes right up to the top of the wall, which I really liked. But different ways, different pictures that reflected hope, humour, but I also think a prophetic challenge. And so the whole group of the artists came and they opened this place called Santa's Ghetto on Manger Square. Art collectors who want to get their art had to come to Bethlehem to get it. And it was a wonderful thing. And I think that was one way of drawing attention. And I would like to say, just before I went out to Bethlehem to start writing the book, I went to hear Archbishop Desmond Tutu speak, and he was saying, such is the value of human beings. We should genuflect in front of each one. They are the temple, the spirit carriers. And he was doing a tribute to Archbishop Trevor Huddleston, and they were looking back at the theology that drove that critique of what went on in apartheid in South Africa. And I felt each time as I listened to the situation and heard the stories, I thought, we should genuflect in front of human beings. Stop pushing them behind walls. And prophetic voices have to be found. And I run on a little bit, and I'm not sure, because we started a bit late, so I'm not sure. Well, yes, we have got time for a question or two. But if I can just finish by saying this, would you also be those who pass on the story and find out ways to do it? That's why I've sent the card down. You can move in, have a look at stuff on our website to get in the book I've done. There are resources you can use in your church at Christmas. So when you say we'd like to do what you've said, but we don't know what to read, it's all there. You can read it in the book. I don't leave many excuses to you. And go and visit. And there are opportunities to do that. Amos Travel, we can take you, but others do that as well. So take the opportunity to go, remember, pray, campaign. Our government should be abiding by international law. It's not happening. There's a responsibility there. And so there are tasks to be done. Can we be those that carry on the message? I think we've got 5 minutes more for questions, so let's give that a try. Yeah. Speaker, come and use the mic and then...
It seems that some of your problem is some of the church in the USA who seem to forget they have Palestinian brothers and sisters living in Bethlehem. And that they're not all Muslims.
Well, and that can be true in a normally a quieter way here, that people are not aware of it. And one of the things, Salim Munaya, who's the director of studies at Bethlehem Bible College, he has said... the problem is, he said, people will often have a theological view of the Jewish people, whether you agree with it or not. They have a theological view. He said they have no theological view of the Palestinian church, for instance. No sense of, why did God put this church here? There is no sense of a sort of theological viewpoint. I thought that was quite an interesting comment. And I think that too often people haven't spent enough time talking with the Palestinian church, because predominantly the indigenous church is Palestinian, inevitably. And but not enough time has been spent talking with them, hearing their needs and supporting them. So, yeah.
Did you try and answer the emails?
No. When they first came in, did I try and answer the emails? There were a couple that I thought deserved answering. But as the quantity increased and I saw the nature of them, I thought, we can't cope. But B, this isn't a reasonable discussion on a lot of them. Wherever there's a reasonable discussion, I'd be very happy to have it. But it just overwhelmed us, so we just said, let's leave that. Yeah. Shout loudly. Okay. EJYMCA, to look that up, about olive picking with the YMCA, and a tremendous, a valuable thing to go and do. The other question was about singing carols in the organic beer tent, I think, and alternative lyrics. Well, in my book there are some alternative lyrics. I haven't got them all here, but interestingly today, Jews for Justice for the Palestinians, no, it's tomorrow. Tomorrow, Jews for the Justice for the Palestinians group will be at the Amos tent. They hold a little stall there as well. And they're the ones who have been driving a lot of alternative carols. And one of them's been phoning me recently. They're going to try and put on a service in London with the alternative carols, which are really trying to reflect what's going on today. So whether we can equip that particular thing, so I don't know. But we could ask the question to some of the Jews for Justice tomorrow. And there are different ways that I think we can creatively make people not only think of... Otherwise, we can tend to get a romantic view of Christmas. And I think it's very important to root it in what's happening today. And somehow the gospel comes more alive on that, I think. Yes, I see a hand there and a hand there, and then that's probably it, I think, yeah. And let's just hear your question, because I can see him signalling at me, yeah. Oh, on a record label. The song to go on a record label and make it a Christmas number one. What a lovely thought. Gives me an opportunity to hold up the CD. Cunningly entitled Bethlehem Palestine. It's available in the record store here. And we'll keep passing it around. And you keep passing it around. It is amazing, especially with the internet now. Things can happen. And who knows? But I just think that if we at least tell the story, that's we have been faithful. How the Wall Comes Down. I've seen that sign, yes, Ich bin ein Berliner. There has to be a recognition. I mean, International Court of Justice has said it's illegal and that it should come down. It's clearly not a security wall. In fact, in one point in the film we're doing, we have Jeff Halper showing people, look, we're between two Palestinian groups. There's no Israelis within miles of this particular bit of wall. So there is a real need to get back to the human rights aspect. It looks a monster. It is a monster. But actually, those same cranes that put them in the ground can pull it out of the ground. It can be done. But I think we have to turn public opinion to say this is not acceptable in our day. I'm always, when you look back at various horrors that have happened in our world, you think, how did people let it happen? This is how. And so if we can break our silence, and incidentally on Monday night Yehuda Shoal from an ex-Israeli army officer from who operated in the Hebron area will be talking. He formed a group of Israeli soldiers saying break the silence about what occupation means. So come and hear his story. But we will continue to tell a story, but I think it needs us passing on that story, raising the issues. And if you've got more questions, pop round to our Amos stall, look up on the website, and I'm very happy to chat with you. Let's take it forward together. I think it's people who are prepared to show that they're utterly committed to both Palestinian and Israeli and reject oppression and human rights abuse. Thank you for being so patient.